Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iran's leader says the Hajj pilgrimage is a global issue that aims to enhance Muslims' unity in the face of arrogant powers. The Arab League Secretary General welcomes Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad back into the bloc after a 12-year suspension. And several Palestinians are injured in yet another Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus.
Welcome to the studios from the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the goal of Hajj is to promote Islamic unity against oppression and arrogance. Addressing officials and a group of pilgrims, Ayatollah Khamenei described Hajj as the most important ritual. He said the occasion is the practical manifestation of Islam's opposition to geographical, racial, class, and other distinctions. This at the time, the leader added, when the self-proclaimed civilized countries are still struggling with black and white, as well as European and non-European racial bias. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that Muslims perform their Hajj rituals like they are from one race and nationality. Some 89,000 Iranians are set to travel to Saudi Arabia this year to perform the annual Hajj pilgrimage. Iran and Russia have finalized an agreement for the construction of a mega railway project that connects the two countries via Azerbaijan. The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi was present at the deal's signing ceremony held in the capital, Tehran. Raisi hailed the construction of the Rasht Astara Railway, calling it an important project which will benefit both countries. The Russian President Vladimir Putin joined the ceremony virtually. He also emphasized the significance of the project and promised that Moscow would put all efforts to complete it. The Rasht Astara Railway will complete a south-north corridor that connects southern Asia to northern Europe. It will have a leading role in facilitating transportation and transit. Journalist and political commentator Fred Weir joined us earlier and told us more on the significance of this mega railway project.
This north-south transport corridor is potentially a really big deal. It would enable ships, if it's completed, to get all the way from India, it would enable a rail link up into Russia and from there along Russian railways east and west to China, to Europe. It's a huge project, and it's suddenly become very important to Russia because of the Ukraine war and factors like that. Russia's isolation. Russia wants to develop alternatives for Russia's economy and its future. And therefore, I think Putin has weighed in. I think Russia will provide the necessary financing. So in 2 or 3 years, we may actually see this project come to fruition. In general, the trend in Eurasia is toward more unity, more economic integration. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is growing very fast. And so these links that sort of avoid the West, avoid the Suez Canal, avoid all that, but become internal links for Eurasia.
Well, the chief of the Arab League welcomes Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad back into the pan-Arab body after a 12-year suspension.
Our council welcomes the dear Faisal al-Miqdad, the foreign minister of the Syrian Arab Republic. We hope that the readmission of Syria's seat will help to end its crisis and to prepare it to recuperate its role in the Arab cooperation.
Abu Ghait made the remarks at the start of a preparatory foreign ministers meeting for the Arab League summit set to be held in Saudi Arabia on Friday. Shortly after the meeting, Miqdad also said the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad will attend the summit in Jeddah, upon an invitation from the Saudi King Salman. The invitation was sent last week after Riyadh and Damascus announced that they would resume work of their diplomatic missions. It also came following Damascus' return to the Arab League earlier this month after its membership was suspended in the wake of the foreign-backed militancy that erupted in Syria in 2011. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Damascus, Muhammad Ali. He gave us more details on Faisal Miqdad's visit to Riyadh and his participation at the foreign minister's meeting.
Speaking about today's developments, just today, Syria's foreign minister, Faisal Miqdad, there in Jeddah, met separately with various and several Arab foreign ministers, like the Emirati foreign minister, the Lebanese, the Jordanian, the Tunisian, the Omani, and others. Following that, those separate meetings, a preparatory ministerial meeting for all Arab foreign ministers was held. And at the start of that meeting, we had the Algerian foreign minister delivering his speech. He said that this meeting today is happening amid special regional circumstances and rapid international developments that require Arabs to unite in order to face challenges. He also said that there should be more efforts to boost joint Arab action. The Arab League Secretary General also delivered a word also welcoming Syria, and he said he hopes Syria's return would be a starting point for ending the crisis inside Syria. Now, most importantly, following that meeting, Syria's foreign minister, Faisal Miqdad, spoke to media outlets, and he said that we are working together with our Arab brothers, and all Arabs are welcoming Syria. He said there are no disputes with regards to issues related with Syria. The foreign minister, Faisal Miqdad, also said that Syria is looking forward for an Arab role that could help Syrian refugees to return back to their homeland, and he stressed that reconstruction would definitely facilitate and encourage the Syrian refugees to return back.
Israelis are racing to obtain passports, as the regime's recent bloodshed in the Gaza Strip and Palestinians' retaliatory strikes have caused havoc among them. Israel's interior minister has called the situation a passport crisis, with reports suggesting a major logjam of people applying for or renewing passports. It has prompted the regime to launch Operation Passport Marathon and create appointment-free passport counters, which will be operating for a month. On the first day of the operation alone, over 6,000 passports were issued. That's according to official figures. Israeli media claim the surge in passport demands is due to the backlog caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. But a survey conducted last year showed Israelis are becoming more and more worried about their future. That's due to the growing might of Palestinian resistance forces, the cost of living crisis, and the power struggle inside of Israel. Israeli forces and settlers have raided an area near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, injuring several Palestinians. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with the details.
This morning, dozens of Israeli settlers raided Nablus, raided the eastern part of the city, to storm Joseph's tomb, Qabr Yusuf. This site that is considered very sacred by the Israelis, and that they are not allowed to enter it because it's inside the city of Nablus. It's surrounded by Palestinian neighborhoods. However, they raided this site, of course, under protection from the Israeli military, who also were there with their guns and raided the site as well to make sure that the settlers are protected and safe. Clashes erupted between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces during the raid. At least six Palestinians were wounded by the fire of Israeli forces. Five others sustained injuries as they fell down while they were, of course, attacked by the Israeli forces. The Palestinians say that they will do their utmost in order to make sure that the settlers will not again enter the Joseph's tomb that is sacred by the Palestinians and Muslims as well. The Israeli forces had also set, a number of checkpoints around the city of Nablus.
Pakistani authorities have accused the former prime minister of sheltering a number of his supporters suspected of attacks on the military establishments following Imran Khan's arrest last week. Punjab officials say intelligence agencies have identified some 30 to 40 people hidden in Khan's home in the eastern city of Lahore. They also warned the former premier to hand over the suspects within 24 hours to prevent police action. Meanwhile, Imran Khan says police have surrounded his home and that his arrest is imminent. Earlier, he also accused his opponents of seeking to trigger a fight between him and the army. Khan's arrest over graft allegations on May 9 sparked violent protests, with his supporters setting fire to government building and public properties, including the army's headquarters. The military says those accused of attacking its installations will be tried in military courts. Let's bring in from Islamabad Nasser Kazmi, our correspondent, who joins us. Nasser Kazmi, obviously they are almost on a witch hunt when it comes to the former Prime Minister Imran Khan. What do you know about these latest accusations that are being leveled against them?
Well, every passing hour, the difficulties of the former Prime Minister Imran Khan are being increased. As we have seen in the past few hours, that there were different statements made by the government ministers, and this was a serious allegation which was labeled against Imran Khan today by the government, that 30 to 40 militants are hiding inside at his residence, who were involved in vandalism on 9th of May. And these are the terrorists which, according to the government, have attacked the military installations on 9th of May. So the government is asking Imran Khan that to produce those militants in 24 hours. However, as I'm talking to you just a few minutes ago, the former Prime Minister Imran Khan, through a video link, he talked to his supporters and he said that he is ready to surrender if police want to come to his residence for checking. He is ready, but he said that there should be a proper way. The police should adopt it. Police should adopt a proper way to for the search of his residence. He turned down the allegations which was labeled against him by the government and said there are no militants inside his residence. And he also turned down the calls from different political parties that the PTI, his party, the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party, was involved in vandalism on 9th of May when the former prime minister was arrested by the authorities. So there is a chaotic situation at the moment. The political turmoil is getting bad to worse in Pakistan in the recent hours, as we have seen that the top military leadership has vowed to arrest those people who were involved in the vandalism on the military installation. Yesterday, there was a crucial meeting of National Security Committee, which is a very powerful committee comprised of the government, the civilian government, as well as the top military officials, in which it was declared that those who were involved on the attacks of the military installations on 9th May, they will be trialed under Army Act. So this is something very alarming, which is also, we have seen that some of the government MPs has also, the government MPs have, criticized this move by the government that the civilians should not be trialed under the military courts. So the Imran Khan is now today, this is something, new, that he is asking his opponents to sit together and to find out a solution that to move forward. And according to his opinion, that the elections are the only way to get rid of this chaotic situation from the country.
Thank you very much for that. Nasser Kazmi there from Islamabad. Thank you, Nasser. The North Korean leader has accused the United States and South Korea of escalating confrontational moves, saying that Pyongyang reserves the right to self-defense. Kim Jong-un made the remarks while inspecting the country's first military reconnaissance satellite. North Korea says it has built the satellite but is yet to launch it. During the inspection, Kim urged officials to speed up preparations for the launch. North Korea has unveiled a number of military capabilities in recent months. Those include new smaller nuclear warheads, a nuclear-capable underwater attack drone, and an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of striking anywhere in the U.S. The hyped up military activities come amid U.S. and South Korean military exercises, which the North says are rehearsals for, quote, all-out war. The Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says his country is ready to partner with South Korea to defend it against North Korea's nuclear and missile threats.
Canada is committed to supporting the Republic of Korea's efforts towards a denuclearized, peaceful, and prosperous Korean Peninsula. We will continue to call on North Korea to return to dialogue and diplomacy.
Addressing South Korea's parliament, Trudeau also urged North Korea to abandon its weapons programs and to resume denuclearization talks. He said that Canada is committed to increase military engagement to fend off threats to regional security. He said that Ottawa is ready to boost partnership with Seoul on critical minerals and clean energy projects as well. Trudeau arrived in Seoul on Tuesday. This is the first visit by a Canadian leader in 9 years. Trudeau has just held talks with the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. The former British Prime Minister Liz Truss has urged the UK government to get tough with China over some issues, including Taiwan.
Recently, there have been too many mixed messages from the free world. We need to end that ambiguity. This is because there are still too many in the West who are trying to cling on to the idea that we can somehow cooperate with China on issues like climate change as if there's nothing wrong.
Truss, who is on a 5-day visit to Taiwan, called the self-ruled island the world's most consequential place. She also criticized her successor Rishi Sunak and other Western governments for their idea of cooperating with China in different fields. China has decried Truss's Taiwan trip, calling it a dangerous political show, which will harm Britain's interests. Tensions between China and the West, the U.S. in particular, has risen over their growing military and political support for Taiwan. Beijing regards the island as its own territory under the One China policy. China often conducts military drills around the island as a warning to Taiwan's separatist forces and their collusion with external powers. The future of grain supply from Ukraine remains ambiguous as a pact between Moscow and Kiev on exports is coming to an end. The UN says the last ship is due to leave a Ukrainian port before the deal expires on Thursday. Officials from Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN met in Istanbul last week to discuss the deal, which allowed Kiev to export its agricultural products through the Black Sea amid the war. The two warring sides signed the deal brokered by the UN and Turkey in last July to help tackle a global food crisis. It has been extended twice, but Russia says it will not accept another extension unless Western sanctions against it are removed. Moscow argues that the restrictions on payments, logistics, and insurance have hindered its exports of food and fertilizer. The grain export through Black Sea has faced many challenges since the Russian military offensive against Ukraine.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items. Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaran Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes. This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results.
the government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported.
It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans with low interest rates, tax exemptions, and easing commercial license issuances. The goal is to encourage the development of Iran's tech ecosystem and boost lucrative high-tech productions for exports.
Research steered by scientific investigation plays a huge role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. And academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and the commercialization of products. Several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. Iran possesses a lot of intellectual prowess as a whole. Evidence of this can be seen by the high number of academic publications both nationally and internationally. Nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Figures from the International Web of Science show Iran was globally ranked 16th in 2019 for its citation work. Numerous knowledge-based companies that provide valuable research and products are born out of university, tech park, and trade zone incubators. These establishments provide platforms that support the creation of new businesses in various fields of advanced tech development as they start up. Incubators offer services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully execute their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. Moreover, incubators are an access channel for services such as workspaces and facilities, technical and legal consultations. These are important for the sustainability of both existing firms as well as innovative startup businesses. The goal is to increase regional economic growth and diversify the national economy. Such development support also strengthens the tech ecosystem and improves investment opportunities. Fire clay is basically mud, but a lighter, stickier type of mud with high alumina content. It's actually everywhere around us, but cannot be seen until it is uncovered from the earth. In its raw form, fire clay is found near or between layers of coal in coal mines. People have been extracting it from the ground for millennia to make bricks, ceramicware, tools homes, and a whole bunch of other things. Its qualities get even better when it's baked and stiffened. This clay has a great number of industrial uses and lasts nearly forever. Our quest for answers led us to a company that owns and manages at least five mines in Fars province. Esterlal Abadi Company specializes in the extraction of fire clay and the production of clay products. Fire clay is a refractory material that can withstand extremely high temperatures without losing its original properties. There are other types of refractories that this company also produces in small amounts, such as high alumina and melite ceramics. But its main claim to fame is the production of highly useful fire clay. It might be interesting to know that this company is not just a mine owner. It also has three factories. These factories make products like fire brick, washroom items such as sinks, and industrial ceramics. Its production facilities can make large amounts of ceramic parts that are used in various fields such as blast furnaces for coke, iron, and steel productions. Because fire clay is heat-resistant, this material presents excellent qualities for outdoor flooring purposes. One of the benefits is it doesn't crack or expand when exposed to hot climates. That is why it is widely used across the country, particularly in central and southern regions where temperatures can often exceed 45 degrees Celsius. The quality of fire clay is assessed by its levels of impurities. This company can produce some of the highest-grade fire clays in the West Asian region with around 75% purity. In general, when the material is extracted, it is then transferred to the Research and Development Department where it is tested for quality. One of the competitive advantages of this company over similar firms in this field is the quality of its products that match international standards. This holding company has created dozens of direct job opportunities over the years, and hundreds more people are indirectly hired as well. Out of some 50 fire clay mines nationwide, this mine has been the only producer that extracts its products along the lines of exports. This company has faced many challenges over the years to enjoy its many achievements. Some are related to the fluctuation of domestic raw material prices. As part of its future vision, it has also overhauled production processes to optimize outputs. Besides the mine we just talked about, there is one other major fire clay deposit which is located in Charmahal-e Bakhtiari province. This mine offers 12 million tons of proven reserves, and it is set to produce some of the best quality refractories in the region. Each year, a combined average of 300,000 tons of fire clay are exported. Iran's tile and ceramic market have become very attractive with rapid socioeconomic development in the West Asian region. Also, there is an increasing need for new housing units in neighboring countries. There are some of the things that are driving Iran's export market in this field. So the country has stepped up its production to gain a larger share of the market. We looked at the latest figures from the Ministry of Industry to gain more insight into the productions in this field. Data showed that in the year 2020, roughly 400 million square meters of tile were produced in Iran. Such productions were estimated to be worth nearly $450 million. These productions were more than local needs, so nearly 160 million square meters of tiles were exported. Industry participants say that this sector is presently operating at only half of its total production capacity, adding that it has high export potential. With this in mind, the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade is working with the government to find ways to expand its markets through production. The goal is to increase production levels by 300 million square meters over the next 4 years. Analysts estimate that this will generate an additional $2 billion in foreign revenues if the strategic sector taps into the full capabilities. Fire clay does not only feed the tile productions. It also supplies raw material to manufacturers of sanitary ceramic ware, such as sinks. Iran currently makes copious amounts of these items. In fact, in the first half of last year alone, over 70,000 tons of sanitary ware were released into the market. Going off on information from the National Customs Administration, these items were mainly exported to neighboring countries. The country's light and heavy construction sector is booming with construction materials in high demands. It is worth noting that domestic raw materials, such as fire clay, meet 100% of Iran's construction needs. But you don't have to take my word for it. Here are some statistics on the construction materials market. Iran's steel, cement, tile, and ceramic industries produced more than twice the country's internal needs. Last year, exports of these items raked in some $10 billion in foreign revenues. Tile, glass, and ceramic exports compose some $3 billion of total exports. Steel exports accounted for the rest. That's all based on statistics from the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. On another note, the country's mega mining and metal sector, which also supplies the construction sector, has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years. Industry participants say this was mainly due to the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry, which led to more focus on other sectors. Much of this expansion is in large part made possible by linking research institutions with manufacturers. This step was critical for sharing knowledge in collaborative product development. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taking years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
All right, everyone, now I will pass it over to my colleague who has prepared an interesting feature program for you all. Let's take a look.
You definitely have a clear image of a concrete or a steel structure, but when it comes to tensile structures, you most likely cannot picture anything. They're self-standing structures carrying only tension and no compression. Mostly made of membrane or industrial fabrics, they're most often used for roofs and canopies, creating unique private and public spaces. Mahout is the name of an Iranian company that makes all kinds of tensile structures. Tensile structures can cover vast areas. While they're lightweight compared to other types of construction, they're extremely strong. Tensile fabric structures are designed and engineered to withstand even the most severe weather conditions, providing protection from both rain and sun. Mahout says its products are made using the latest technology and high-quality materials, on par with their international peers. Mahout has under its belt a dedicated team of experts who are constantly exploring new trends and efficient designs for eye-catching yet resilient tensile structures. While the Iranian brand has a strong foothold in Iran's market and is eyeing higher horizons, Mahout says it's working to undertake international projects. Offering a unique landscape for outdoor eateries, restaurants, and coffee shops, tensile structures are beginning to attract more attention in the architecture industry. This means the future market will be lucrative for the actors in this field. And Mahout says it will stand out, as it believes quality is in the details.
There is so much more that can be said about knowledge-based products, so let's take a look at some news and trends in this field. You have probably heard the phrase NFT, or non-fungible tokens, being thrown around recently. The very first Iranian NFT issuance platform was established and launched in the country. The platform is called Beta. It was created by a company in the field of developing digital technologies in the information communication technology sector. Beta digitally certifies artistic and non-artistic works in the form of non-fungible tokens. The developer says it plans to increase international access and grow the platform's ecosystem to determine accurate asset values. People can purchase NFT that are backed by authentic art approved by the system and sold at auction. Most people don't think twice about fungi, but what if it could be used to help treat diseases? Well, an Iranian knowledge-based company has managed to come up with the technology to produce rare medicinal fungi. This company focused on producing four species of medicinal fungi. Once cultivation conditions have been established, these plants can be mass-produced. Its medicinal properties will be used in the form of tablets and capsules. These fungi have the potential to treat liver disease, immune deficiencies, diabetes, and some skin diseases. Plus, the four species can now be cultivated in 3 months. The number of cars and pollution increases as cities grow, and one way to manage this issue is to create specialized technology. Domestic knowledge-based companies and startups have developed 17 innovative products to improve road traffic and reduce air pollution. The products were developed to address the rising number of vehicles and inner-city trips in cities nationwide. Some of these smart products are used to record traffic violations, collect traffic information, and license systems for restricted traffic zones, among many others. Smart traffic monitoring systems have also been developed by these companies. We are fresh out of time for our program for today. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you right here next time for another edition of Bazaar.
Ocean of Dua.
Allah. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In the previous edition of the program, we had a look at the different parts, different phrases of Kumail supplication in details. In this edition, however, we will have a look at the general frame of supplication of Kumail. Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, regarding the structure of this Kumail supplication, we were talking about the different means of recourse in the supplication of Kumail. We said that we will have a look at these four means of recourse which have appeared throughout this supplication in details. The first means was Allah's previous goodness and kindness and grace towards His servants, His birr, karam and fadl towards the servants. The second means was our love for Him. In the first means, Imam Ali alayhi salam sought recourse to Allah with the love of Allah for us. And thereafter, we seek recourse to Him, to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with our love for Him. So Imam Ali alayhi salam says in this regard, Can you see yourself tormenting me with your fire after I have professed your oneness, your unity? As a comment on these phrases, let us have a look at this story. It is said that after Allah granted him a kingdom and power over Egypt, one day, Prophet Yusuf, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, was viewing the city from the balcony of his palace. With him in the balcony was a righteous servant of Allah, whom he had bestowed with knowledge and light. A young man happened to pass under the balcony. So that righteous man said to Prophet Yusuf, Do you know this young man? No, he answered. The righteous man said, This is the infant who testified to your innocence the day you were accused by the king's wife. A witness of her own household testified, If his shirt is torn from the front, she tells the truth and he lies. But if his shirt is torn from behind, then she lies and he tells the truth. This is the Holy Quran's verse. That suckling infant who bore witness in the cradle in favor of you has now grown up to become a young man. And here he is. So Prophet Yusuf, ala nabiyyina wa alihi salam, called him and seated him beside him. He acclaimed him and bestowed a robe of honor upon him, whilst the pious servant looked in amazement at what Prophet Yusuf was doing. Prophet Yusuf asked that young man, righteous man of his, Are you astonished at what I have done with this young man? This is what Prophet Yusuf asked. The pious man said, No, but this young man did not do anything except that he testified to your innocence. And it was Allah who made him to speak, so he does not deserve any credit for it. But in spite of this, you gave him such respect and bestowed a robe of honor upon him. The moral of the story is that if Prophet Yusuf, ala nabiyyina wa alayhi salam, held that young man in great esteem just because he testified to his innocence, then how can Allah burn the face of a servant who used to prolong his prostrations before him, or burn the heart of a servant after it is filled with the love of the Almighty Allah, or burn a tongue which, as the Kumail supplication says, frequently remembered him. Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Ya Allah.
ظلمت نفسي يا مولاي. ظلمت نفسي. Love. أشهد على العزيمة جوارحي
قوي على خدمتك جوارحي وأشهد على العزيمة جوارحي
واشتد على العزيمة جوانحي واشتد على العزيمة جوانحي.
So that's why, dear listeners, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Can you see yourself tormenting me with your fire after I have professed to your unity? After your knowledge my heart has embraced, after your remembrance my tongue has constantly mentioned." In this regard, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Would that I knew my master, my lord and my protector. Are you going to inflict fire over faces that fell down in prostration before your greatness? Or over tongues voicing sincerely the profession of your oneness and thanking you in praise? Hearts acknowledging your divinity through verification, or over minds encompassing knowledge of you while they have become humble, and upon the bodily members speeding to the places of your worship in obedience and beckoning for your forgiveness in submission? Such opinion is not held of you, nor has such been reported about you, thanks to your grace, O all generous." So this is the means that Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about. This is how Imam Ali alayhi salam puts these concepts into words. يَا لَيْتَ الشِّعْرِ يَا سَيِّدِي وَإِلَهِ وَمَوْلَيْ أَتُسَلِّقُ النَّارَ عَلَى وُجُوهٍ خَرَّتْ لِعَظَمَتِكَ سَاجِدَةً وَعَلَى أَلْسُنٍ نَطَقَتْ بِتَوْحِيدِكَ صَادِقَةً وَبِشُكْرِكَ مَادِحَةً وَعَلَى قُلُوبٍ اعْتَرَفَتْ بِإِلَهِيَّتِكَ مُحَقِّقَةً. Until the part where it says, مَا هَكَذَا الظَّنُّ بِكَ. Such opinion is not held of you. وَلَا أُخْبِرْنَا بِفَضْلِكَ عَنْكَ يَا كَرِيمُ يَا رَبِّ. Nor has such been reported about you, thanks to your grace, O all generous. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.